Welcome back. For those outside of Northern Virginia, it may be surprising to hear protests that began before Halloween are still underway. The Amalgamated Transit Union Local 689 is striking against metro privatization, and the union's president says that the group's members are in it for a marathon, not a sprint. The protests have affected roughly 6% of Metro's bus routes. The strike began on October 24th and shows no signs of letting up. And starting last week, airline workers at Reagan National Airport are also striking for better pay and health care. Joining me in studio to discuss the latest is Jordan Pascal. He is the transportation reporter at WAMU. Jordan, I'll start with you. You've been covering this month-long union strike against a WMATA contractor. Bring us up to speed on what's taking place.
Yeah, Kojo, like you said, it was before Halloween, and I remember the press release came out during Game 2 of the World Series. So if that, you know, kind of gives you an idea of how long ago it was. But this fight has been really brewing for a lot longer than that. Starting in 2017, Metro was kind of mulling the idea of privatizing some services, including the new Silver Line extension. They thought it would be a good idea to save personnel costs on retirement, healthcare, that sort of thing. And the union really bristled at that idea. And then last August, Metro contracted out a new bus garage called the Cinderbed Road Garage that serves 18 routes in Northern Virginia and serves about 8,000 trips a day. So workers there last year organized under the local Amalgamated Transit Union and have been negotiating a contract for about a year, most of this year. And so they voted to authorize the strike in August and then went on strike a few months later.
Also joining us in studio is Brian Weivel, political organizer for the Amalgamated Transit Union, ATU Local 689. Brian, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Kojo.
As a member of Local 689, what do you say led to this strike, and what would be your ideal outcome?
Absolutely. So we have been on strike due to the fact that the company has been consistently committing unfair labor practices that has made it nearly impossible to get the type of agreement that we believe these workers deserve. But some of the major issues that have been motivating these striking workers for 40 days have been the fact that they receive at a top wage rate $12 an hour less than a Metro bus operator for driving the same routes that Metro bus operators used to drive in the same uniform, in the same buses, with the same passengers. So that $12 an hour really makes a difference. And then in addition to that, they have a $6,000 deductible for their insurance. And also, they have a retirement plan that's not worth the paper it's printed on. So these workers have been out there basically with one simple demand, which is either give them the ability to have a collective bargaining agreement that brings them up to parity with WMATA workers, or kick out Transdev and just have WMATA hire them directly to do the exact same work they've already been doing.
You mentioned Transdev. That is the French-based contractor with Metro that runs this operation here. We reached out to Transdev, and they responded yesterday with a statement. It read in part, quoting here, "Mr. Jackson would like you to believe," that would be Raymond Jackson, who is the president of ATU 689. "Mr. Jackson would like you to believe Metro drivers make $12 more than Transdev drivers. This is untrue. Upon award of the bus services contract in 2018, all of Transdev's employees were new hires. Each person is still in their first year of work. They received $18 in training and $20 an hour once they successfully completed training and continue to do so. While we bargain a new contract, according to the ATU 689 Union Board, in 2018, WMATA bus operators received $16 an hour and in training, and once they successfully completed training, they moved to $19.68 an hour." End quote. What would your response be to that?
Absolutely. I mean, the thing that they're ultimately ignoring is top wage rates. It is correct that the operators at this facility make $20 an hour, and Metro bus operators make a similar wage rate in the beginning. But what ultimately matters is what they make next year, the year after that, and the year after that. And so far, if we're going by what the company has offered at the bargaining table, we're talking about a grand total of an increase in wage rates of 20 cents. That their salary as of next year would be $20.20. That's why these operators have been out on strike, and mechanics and utility workers have been out on strike for 40 days. It's because they think these wage rates are a slap in the face to their dignity.
Jordan, this strike has in fact sparked a debate about Metro's move toward privatizing more of its operations. What does Metro currently outsource to third-party companies, and is there a push to privatize more?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that they contract out for, and, you know, they did some janitorial services at some points. You know, things like replacing roofs or air conditioning, that sort of thing, are all things that they've contracted out for just this year. But some of the public-facing things that they've contracted out are things like Metro Access paratransit. The Cinderbed Road garage, obviously, is the main issue now. And they do want to do more privatization in the future with the Silver Line, which is hopefully going to open next year. But they think they'll be able to save money if they have someone privately run that operation.
As far as the rider experience is concerned, does it matter who is operating the vehicles or offering the services?
I think it does in certain ways. I think people see Metro on the side of a bus and assume Metro is responsible. I think it's kind of created an added layer of maybe confusion or communication issues. You're not really sure who's responsible, and it kind of muddies the water on accountability in some ways, I think.
Brian, would your members be better served if they were Metro or WMATA employees, and how so?
Absolutely. So one of the first things when we went out on strike, the workers, their demand was simply, you know, get us wage parity, get us benefit parity. As the strike has gone on, many of them are actually sick and tired of working for TransDev itself and have started to make very clear that they would prefer to be full WMATA employees with all of the benefits that come with that. Speaking to Jordan's earlier point about lack of accountability, we'll actually note that anytime a person calls into the customer service line or tries to complain about a route that is operated by TransDev, they're actually told that this is they're calling the wrong complaint line. They're told to contact TransDev anytime there's an issue with one of those buses. So we think it's very important that for even rider accountability, that they're given the option of kind of dealing with a normal WMATA Metro bus.
We also reached out to the Metro board and were told that no one was available to join us for today's conversation. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk about some other labor actions that have been taking place in this region. I'm Kojo Nan.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picou and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
Welcome back. We're talking about job actions in this region with Jordan Pascal, transportation reporter at WAMU. Brian Weivel is the political organizer for the Amalgamated Transit Union, ATU Local 689. And also joining us in studio is Margarita Alonzo, Deputy Organizing Director of the Service Employees International Union. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Tanae Stover is a member of Unite Here, Local 23, and an airline employee at Ronald Reagan National Airport. Tanae Stover, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Jordan, the bus driver strikes, as I said, are not the only labor protests that we've seen in this region recently. Last week, during the height of the Thanksgiving travel rush, airline catering service workers protested four airports, including Reagan National. What led to those strikes?
I mean, the same thing that leads to a lot of strikes. It's, you know, better pay, better benefits, better working conditions, that sort of thing. This is a little complicated because the airlines contract out for these catering services. So the negotiations are between the subcontractor and the workers. But the workers say that the airlines have more sway and could kind of help fix the issue. But the airlines largely want to stay out of it. And that kind of mirrors how WMATA has operated with these subcontractors as well, kind of saying it's between these two parties and, you know, we'll step out.
Tanae, you were one of the airline employees striking last week. Why did the group feel such a protest was necessary? And what do you think the airlines, and I think in particular American Airlines, can do to help?
So, as he mentioned, SkyChefs is a subcontractor, but American Airlines is our biggest client. American Airlines is where SkyChefs get the money. We feel that it's very important to publicize. What we did on Tuesday was not a strike, but it was to publicize what the workers at LSG SkyChefs nationwide, all over the country, have to deal with the low pay wages, the very expensive health insurance that we have to pay, and then us having no pension. For me, I was very affected by it. I was evicted from my place 2 years ago working at LSG Sky Chefs, only making $8.40 an hour. Since then, here now in 2019, I make $13 an hour. That was $2-3 increase that we received from American Airlines from the airport because of the wage that they increased, but we're asking for more. $13 is not enough. The lowest paid worker at LSG Sky Chef makes $9.85 an hour. And while the economy is rising, we're still being left behind. Sky Chef has been forgotten about for years, and we're fed up with it. Now we want to publicize what the workers are dealing with. On top of the low pay, we pay very expensive health insurance.
How has the cost of your health insurance and the lack of pensions affected you and your coworkers?
For me, single, I pay $60 a week. That's $200-$300 a month coming out of my paycheck. We still have to co-pay. Certain deductibles aren't covered under the health plan. Workers with families have to pay $150 a week. That's almost $400, $500 a month coming out of their pocket just for health insurance.
Margarita, you represent SEIU,
a labor
union representing workers from the public sectors, property services, and healthcare sectors. How do strikes, in your view, impact the public perception of unions?
I think strikes create an opportunity for the public to hear the stories of the workers that helps elevate the situation that the workers are facing day in and day out. Something to keep in mind is that the majority of jobs created in our country in the last 30 years are both low wage and low hour jobs, which means in our communities, people are really struggling. The examples that have been shared are real. When we talk to our members at the airport, and we also have members at the airport, workers talk about fearing homelessness because the wages, even though they've gone up and workers have organized and have succeeded at raising the wages, it's still not enough because in DC, it's so expensive to live here. And so when workers strike and when workers, working men and women, take action, it helps the public hear what's going on in this situation and understand what their struggle is and how they can support to help improve the situation.
Well, a lot of the members of the public who might feel inconvenienced about this, because residents of this region tend to support unions in polling data. Do you think that changes when workplace actions or strikes occur?
Not in my experience, no. In my experience, the public supports workers who are taking action because they understand that they're part of our community. Workers, working men and women, strike because they're trying to provide for their families. At the airport, when we started organizing, we found men and women who had to have three jobs, and they were living in their cars and living at the airport and would never see their children, right? And we, in our community here, want schools to do better, children to do better. We want less crime, but we have to allow our citizens in our community to have good jobs, to be able to work one job and to make ends meet, to be able to spend time with their children. And so when workers take action, that's why they do, because they're trying to improve their situation.
Tane, when you and your coworkers were taking action last month, what was the response you were getting from travelers?
We had support from travelers. They did not know what was going on, and that's why I say it is necessary for us to publicize what it is that we're dealing with at Sky Chefs. But we had them supporting us. They definitely understood and agreed that we do, and we should be getting paid what we're asking for. We're asking for 15. We're asking for affordable health insurance. I think any worker understands and agrees to that, that as long as the workers are there and they're the ones who are raising the increase with the company, then the workers deserve to get the 15, to get better health insurance, to have a better lifestyle.
Brian Weibel, same question to you.
Absolutely. I mean, we've been blown away by the amount of public support from riders and from community members that we've received. Of course, we did not take this decision to go out on strike lightly. We recognize that this is, not just our jobs, not just our members' jobs on the line here, but the thousands of riders that are out there, that they would also be deeply affected by this. And that's why, we actually, as a bus operator, you're in direct contact with, people every day. And many of them said that actually they had people reach out and say, where have you been? Where are you? I missed you. That's what part of the reason why many of our operators, as they look for this strike to be over, they say, one of the things they miss the most is seeing their passengers every day.
Jordan, D.C. region, does it have a history of being pro-union?
The guests might have a little bit better opinion, but I mean, I came from a lot of work, right-to-work states, and so I've seen a lot more union activity here than I have anywhere else. I was looking at the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and they said about 12% of D.C. workers are unionized, and I think New York might have the most with about 25% union membership. That being said, D.C. does have some of the better labor laws in the country, but maybe someone else has a little bit better knowledge on that than I do.
Well, last week, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam says he does not support repeal of his state's right-to-work law. How does this law's continued existence impact local unions?
Yeah, so basically it means that participation in a union can't be a condition for employment in the state. Yeah. For instance, I know for some of my friends in media companies in Virginia are unionized, but not everyone is a union member, and I think unions kind of think that maybe weakens bargaining positions a little bit. So, I think just the strength of the union having everyone instead of just partial.
Brian, not that I have to ask, but what is the ATU's position?
Absolutely.
On right-to-work laws?
So, I mean, it's so much more than just about whether you have an open or closed shop within a unit. Right-to-work laws are
I should explain for our listeners who may not know what you're talking about. An open shop means that everyone who works in that institution does not have to join a union. A closed shop means that everyone who works in that institution has to join the union because they will be benefiting from the agreements that the union has made with the employer.
Absolutely. And part of the reason why these right-to-work laws are so damaging to unions is actually has nothing to do with dues collection or open shop, closed shop laws. When we first went out to organize the Cinderbed Road property, we were thrown off the property by management, kicked out, had the police called on us. And one of the first things that the police officer said to us was, "This is a right to work state." That is completely unintelligible. That makes no sense. That has absolutely nothing to do with right to work laws. But it's because the general public understanding of right to work laws is that they are anti-worker. And if you are in a right to work state, you believe that you have fewer union benefits or union protections or union rights. And that's why it's important that we get rid of right-to-work laws, because it's more than just about dues collection or open shop. It's about making sure that we actually establish Virginia as a pro-worker state.
So you were disappointed with Governor Northam's statement?
I was not shocked, but I was extremely disappointed. And
regardless, why were you not shocked?
I think anyone that's voted for George Bush twice had made themselves perfectly clear on this issue. And Governor Northam had publicly stated a couple of times that he was kind of on the fence on this issue. But I think it's important to recognize that the labor movement doesn't take its cues from the governor. The labor movement takes its cues from its members. And our members have been demanding for decades, since 1947, that we're going to go against this right-to-work law.
Margarita, what is SEIU's position on right-to-work laws?
We think that they need to go away, that they need to end. We were really disappointed when Northam came out in that way. Virginia, according to, I have a thing here on the Oxfam, ranked Virginia dead last in the ranking of best place to work in America in terms of like workers' rights, worker protection, worker safety. And workers, working men and women in this country want to have better jobs, better protection, and that's really important for our community. Right now, the folks that are making money in places at the airport generates a bunch of income, and that money is going to the wealthiest people, to the Delta CEO, to the CEO of contractors, instead of going to our communities. And then our communities suffer because of that. And so when we have laws like right to work that make it harder for workers to organize, it makes inequality grow.
Tanay, do you believe the airline workers at Reagan National would have been able to carry out the job action last week without the backing of Unite Here Local 23?
No. Thankfully, we do have the union there to protect us. That's the reason why, like Margarita's saying, the right to work, it does need to go away. Like, we're against anyone who doesn't allow the workers to express their feelings, express what they're going through, and to have unions on your side is the best thing that happens to workers.
So what's next for the workers who took the job action last week? What happens next?
What happens next is us to continue to fight, to continue to be at the airports expressing our feelings until we get what we're asking for. They haven't put anything on the table. It's not right for us to not get what we're asking for. As I mentioned, statistically, they have made billions of dollars in profits off of the works that the workers do, off of our backs, and not putting it in our pockets. And so until we get it, we're going to continue to be out at the airports fighting.
Are there active negotiations taking place at all? No, Margaret, Margarita?
So our members, along with the members from Unite Here, are talking to the MWA board members to raise the wages. We did that a few years ago, and the wages went, they're going to go all the way up to $12.75 in January. But we're pushing for the wages to go up to $15 and beyond, because we believe that's what a living wage is in this area. We all know it's very, very expensive to live in D.C., and workers are still struggling. And we had a roundtable meeting, and workers shared how hard it is to make ends meet. One worker shared really passionately about how he struggles every month to pay his rent and his bills. And he did the math for us. And a monthly rent of $800 on a wage of $12 an hour is very hard. And he's scared that he will be homeless. And before we organized, we met workers who came in and out of homelessness. And that has gone down. We hear those stories less and less. But workers are still really struggling. And the wages need to be fair. People need to make a living wage.
And finally, this for you, Brian. What do you think are the misconceptions that people have about unions?
First of all, I think the misconceptions about unions are that you can get, reliable wage increases, protections on the job, any other way. Fundamentally, we've watched as this country has, become the wealthiest nation in human history, and people are doing better than ever, but those benefits are not necessarily, trickling down to working people. And that's because the engine of prosperity for working people has always been the labor movement. And any of the, the quote-unquote good times that working people had in this country were because of high union density and the ability of workers to take action to make sure that they got what they need.
Great, that's all the time we have. Brian Weivel is the political organizer for the Amalgamated Transit Union, ATU Local 689. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Margarita Alonzo is the Deputy Organizing Director of the Service Employees International Union. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Danae Stover is a member of Unite Here Local 23 and an airline employee at Ronald Reagan National Airport. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Jordan Pascal is the transportation reporter here at WAMU. Jordan, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Kojo.
This conversation about unions was produced by Laura Spitalniak, and today's segment about Amazon's housing deal was produced by Julie Deppenbrock. Coming up tomorrow, 'tis the season for holiday shows. We hear from some of the artists behind beloved winter performances in the D.C. region. Plus, Washington fashion, it's not an oxymoron. We hear from some people in the industry on how this town can be fashion forward. That all starts tomorrow at noon. Until then, thank you for listening. I'm Kojo Nam.
The Kojo Namdi Show is produced by Julie Deppenbrock, Sydney Grannon, Margaret Barthel, Lauren Marco, and Maura Curry. Our managing producer is Mana Kashvi. Our engineer is Josephine Neonai. Our intern is Laura Spitalniak. For past shows and more content, visit kojoshow.org.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.